The power of language. One of the gifts we can give our children is to teach them the metaphysical power of words. I hate school. Everybody hates me. And I'm not good looking enough are powerful statements that seem innocuous but are not. It behooves us as parents to teach our children that what we proclaim to be true will then seem to be true. At times I've caught myself saying negative things I don't even believe, giving into a kind of mental self-indulgence that is the enemy of happiness. In fact, training our minds is as important as training our bodies and just as important to our health. Because of the work I do, I receive many letters from people around the world. There have been days when I was complaining or worrying about such meaningless things, and then read a letter from a parent who had lost a child. A soldier's father asking for prayer, or a patient battling cancer. My perspective would then be radically and automatically altered. So I have tried to develop the habit of gratitude and praise as I realize how fortunate I am and affirm it with my thoughts. Wow, what a beautiful day this is. Just a simple reminder of the beauty of life will literally make your life more beautiful. In God, there are no good guys or bad guys. There are loving choices, which will be met with happiness, and unloving choices, which will be met with pain. And the miracle worker interprets all that is not love as a call for love. Regarded in this light, the closed heart of another cannot hurt us anymore. For it was not the closed heart of another that caused us to suffer, but rather our instinct to close our heart in response. Pray for those who have wronged you, and the pain you have suffered will turn to peace. It may not happen instantly, that's true. If someone lied about you, other people may believe the lies. If someone stole from you, it might take time to make your finances right. But that is the meaning of the symbolic 3 days between the crucifixion and the resurrection. It takes time for the light to ascend again, but it will. As long as our hearts are open while we're in the midst of a crucifixion, open to love, to forgiveness, and to what we ourselves need to learn and atone for, then resurrection is inevitable. Whatever it is, this too shall pass. Radical change. I've heard it said, people don't change, but it's a principle of faith that through the radical alchemy of God's love, we can and do change. There is something in each of us that wants to become better, that wants to improve. The spirit is always seeking to rise up. In 1999, one of my close friends adopted 2 young brothers, 5 and 7 years old, from a county foster care program. Because they had been horribly abused by their parents, Carl and Dylan displayed common symptoms of severely traumatized children. As a consequence, they were not successful at transitioning into foster homes, much less an adoptive one. At one point, they had even been on an adoption track with one couple and ultimately returned to the agency. They probably were on a slow track to the worst kind of life before my friend took them into his. Many of the people around my friend, including me, worried that he had taken on too big a task. How could he, as a single man, cope with 2 traumatized young boys and successfully parent them? Yet as the weeks and months and years went by, all who knew them witnessed a miracle. Little Carl and Dylan became model children, and no one who now meets them would ever guess that they had come from troubled circumstances. My friend's love and radical care created the space for the boys to change, to grow, to become the children they were meant to be and still could be. Their adoptive father's patience and love accomplished an astonishing feat. Miracles of personal transformation do occur, and they can occur in each of us. Whenever our outer world remains stuck, it is incumbent upon us to look not outward, but inward. It is a call to find the places in ourselves where we're holding on to old ways, where we blame others rather than taking personal responsibility for our woes, where we judge others instead of blessing them, where we are hard rather than vulnerable and open and kind. These issues hold the hidden keys to unlocking our unsolved personal mysteries. In order to achieve breakthroughs in the external world, we had best strive to achieve internal ones. For the level of consciousness is the level of cause. Addressing problems at their cause means addressing them inside our own selves. Addressing problems only on the level of their effects in the outside world is failing to address them deeply at all. The Power of Love. When my sister was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1989, she said to her oncologist, "My sister says I should go to a spiritual support group." To which he responded, "And what medical school did your sister go to?" The good news is that today, such a patronizing, condescending attitude toward the physical benefits of spiritual practice is hard to find among doctors. If someone is diagnosed with a life-challenging disease, their doctor is now likely to be the first person to say, "Get over to one of those spiritual support groups." And why? Because the most prestigious academic institutions have scientifically substantiated that among people who have been diagnosed with a life-challenging illness, those who attend spiritual support groups live twice as long after diagnosis. The fact we think love is a fierce and awesome power doesn't mean we're wimpy thinkers. I was once interviewed on a TV talk show, and the interviewer introduced me by making some snide comment about how I was a pacifist and thought there should be no army. I looked at him stunned, and I asked him where in the world he got that idea. "Well, I just assumed it," he said. "You think love is the answer to everything, so I figured you think a military would be a bad thing." It's amazing how much ridicule the topic of love can attract when it does anything other than support the status quo. To go from "she thinks love is the answer" to "she doesn't think we should have a military" is to trivialize the most profound philosophical and spiritual truth ever expressed on earth. The Course in Miracles says the world is an unhappy dream, which must become a happy dream before we can awaken from it. That means the world must be transformed before it can be transcended. It is the purpose ascribed to something that determines its holiness, and there's nothing inherently unspiritual about the military. In fact, there are people at work within the U.S. military today who have more enlightened thoughts regarding future possibilities for our armed forces than one might think. Perhaps our military will manifest in our lifetime the ultimate fulfillment of the notion of armed forces. They will be armed with psychological, spiritual, and emotional skills at building social and political relationships as much as they are now armed with military hardware. For institutions evolve as consciousness evolves, and we are on the verge of a mass realization that if we want to change the world, we must become as sophisticated in the ways we wage peace as we're now sophisticated in the ways we wage war. Regardless of who ridicules us, it's important we continue to celebrate love, not only the good feelings it brings, but also its actual power to heal all things. On the level of true solution, love is the answer no matter what category of human experience. According to Mahatma Gandhi, love can heal all social and political as well as personal relationships. We've only scratched the surface of love's power, and when we dig deeply, we will find it to be more explosive than a nuclear bomb. We need an integrative approach to world affairs, in which the emotional, psychological, and spiritual realms are given their place at the table of power. Jesus himself said, "Love your enemies and pray for those who curse you." Martin Luther King Jr. said Mahatma Gandhi was the first person to take a love ethic and turn it into a broad-scale force for good. And this is not just nice. It is imperative. King said we have come to the point where it is no longer a choice between violence and nonviolence. It is a choice between violence and non-existence. Several years ago, I was asked by Mrs. Coretta Scott King to speak in Atlanta at her late husband's official birthday celebration. I was one of the last speakers on the program. I sat and listened to speaker after speaker talk about Dr. King as though all he did was pour fairy dust over America. How great it was, all that love he spread. No one mentioned the fierce resistance he encountered, the struggle at the heart of his journey, a struggle for which he ultimately sacrificed his life. When it was my turn to speak, I had to mention that the love for which Dr. King both lived and died was not convenient to the status quo then, and it is not convenient to the status quo now. Dr. King did not stand for sentimental love or popular love or convenient love. God's love is often none of these things, and if we are to truly honor Dr. King's memory, we must strive our best to do as he did, to take a stand for love even in the face of ridicule and hate. The ego can destroy the body, but it cannot destroy an idea. The resurrection of both Gandhi and King lies in our willingness to stand strongly for the ideas that gave their lives meaning. Those ideas will give our lives meaning as well. A Course in Miracles teaches that God is not looking for martyrs, he's looking for teachers. Surely few among us have achieved a perfect love, an unconditional love, but the notion that a great wave of love will be the salvation of the human race is an idea whose time has come. And our willingness to be part of that wave gives a transcendent purpose to our lives. We are not naive about evil. We don't pour pink paint over it and pretend it doesn't exist. We read the papers. We grieve the suffering. But many of us think God has a plan, and we believe still that its name is love. Not a silly love, not a childish love, but a powerful love, an awesome love so aligned with God that it will change all things. It will change all things, having changed us first. King stressed the Gandhian concept that the end is inherent in the means. Only if we try to practice peace can we truly be bringers of peace, and the universe will give us ample opportunity to try. As I prepared to give my talk that day, I saw behind the podium a guest I had not known would be there, Mrs. Laura Bush. I had planned to speak about what Martin Luther King Jr. might have to say about President Bush's military policies, and all of a sudden I wasn't so sure about my prepared remarks. I felt caught between a rock and a hard place. I didn't want to water down my remarks to make sure I offended no one, but I also didn't want to shame or embarrass the woman sitting behind me by sharply criticizing the man she sleeps with every night. If I wasn't practicing sisterhood toward her, then I wasn't practicing peace. I did a little editing of my speech, but not a lot. And every time I mentioned the president, I made some comment directed at Mrs. Bush about how our prayers were with her husband during this difficult time after 9/11. I tried to express my disagreements with the president in a way that didn't personally dishonor him. At the end of my talk, I turned around to shake the hand of Mrs. King and then Mrs. Bush. When I got to the First Lady, I started to say I was sorry if I had sounded too hard on the president. But before I could say anything, Mrs. Bush put her finger to my lips and said, "Shh, you did great." She was a generous woman to me that day. She recognized my effort to find a middle way, and I appreciated her acknowledging it. Over and over again, in millions of subtle and not so subtle ways, people are bridging the divides between us. One day we will look around and the divides will be gone, both those in ourselves and those in the world. We will have crossed over to a much better place. Returning to our right minds. We were born with a natural desire to extend ourselves in love, yet the thinking of the world entrains us to think unnaturally. Sometimes it takes something out of the ordinary to jolt us back to our true reality. Once I had a terrible headache while flying, and by the time we landed, I was feeling nauseated. I then got very sick, apparently with food poisoning. There I was, throwing up at a public stall in an airport bathroom, and all these women who had never seen me in their lives gathered round to help me. I could hardly believe it. They were putting damp compresses on my forehead, helping me get to a place to lie down, two of them even performing a powerful hands-on healing and prayer. I started to cry, and it wasn't because I was sick. I was crying because of how touched I felt, having all these complete strangers taking care of me. Such spontaneous compassion occurs when situations happen so quickly that ego thoughts of fear and separation are bypassed. Ironically, dangerous situations often bring out the natural in people. I have a feeling that the amazing ladies who gave me the hands-on healing in the airport that day might not have approved of some of my more inclusive religious beliefs. But in the moments when we were so purely alive, when we get to see, for whatever reason, that we are life and that life itself is so precious, we give ourselves permission to see that we are all brothers and to behave that way. That is what the world will be like when our minds will have been purified and our hearts released to love. What occurred in that instance is that everyone showed up instinctively to contribute what was theirs to contribute. And that is how the entire world can be healed and will be healed when we have been returned to our right minds. That is the problem with the world today. We are literally not in our right minds. At least in America, we've allowed a competitive ethos that is appropriate to our economic system to dominate our social interactions as well. We have in too many cases lost our sense of community connection and larger familial relationship as children of one God. Whether someone lives in a neighboring town or a neighboring country, they are our brothers and all of us are equally precious in the eyes of God. We do know that, but do we act that way? When we do, we will return to the garden and not before. All of us are on a spiritual path, but some people simply don't know it. All of us, individually and collectively, are being forced by circumstances to remember who we are in relation to love itself. And we will learn this through wisdom, or we will learn it through pain. We can embrace the truth of our oneness, or we can resist the lesson and learn it later. But the longer we wait, the more chaos we will generate. For the sake of our children, may we learn it now.